You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious!
Now, the man, I don't want to give too much away, but he's a man. The man we're about to have a chat to is a legend in the Australian entertainment industry, and I've known him for a long time. He's had a record company, he's had a production company. He's on the radio, on a Nightline radio show, I think, every other week or every week. We'll ask him about that. He's recorded songs for the Commonwealth Games. He has toured the United Kingdom, and he's been over entertaining our troops in Vietnam at various stages. Well, not at various stages, when the war was on. He was a sheet metal worker. A sheet metal worker at the Commonwealth Aircraft Corporation when he arrived here from England. He's an English-born Aussie legend, and he's more commonly known, his body of work has been extensive, but he's more commonly known for putting the AFL on the map by writing and singing the great standard that is now synonymous with Australian football, Up There Kazaley. Now, if you need any more prompting as to who this is, it's the great Mike Brady. Welcome to You Cannot Be Serious, Mike.
Oh, it's lovely to be here, Sam, and lovely to see you. Yeah, we do go back a long way, don't we?
We go back. I just want to ask you this. We tried to do a little research. This got me. This is what it says that, if I can just get this thing to work, so just a minute, here we go. This is what it says. Brady is also the chairman of Cogmetrics, a predictive people analytics company that uses cognitive neuroscience software for talent management, recruitment, productivity and organisational development. Holy shit. What does that mean?
Well, it's a bit old.
Is that old?
I'm not on with that company.
Okay,
anymore,
what did that mean?
Well, it was cognitive development for driving capabilities.
Yeah, mental acuity.
That's right. Yeah. Exercises, programs to make people use a little bit more of their brain, like you, of course.
Yeah,
you
know? Like
that. I remember when you came to see me with the great Len Thompson years ago, because you wanted to get into radio and television.
Yep.
And you sat there looking around the room. You didn't say a word, and Len did all the talking.
Yep.
Lovely Len, a great mate of you and mine, of course. And he rang me, he said, "How did it go?" And I said, "Well, I can see you having a career in television and radio, Lenny, but your mate doesn't talk."
Fantastic. That's
and you
good.
Started and we couldn't shut you up.
Ah, that's good. Well, now, Mike, you are the Don McLean of you are the Don McLean of the Australian record industry, because Don McLean's known for American Pie and you are known for a whole lot of other things, but Up There Kazaley is your sort of bread and butter. And what a story. Not your bread and butter, but you are known nationally for Up There Kazaley at every AFL and every award, and rightly so. And before we get on to how that started, I actually really know how that started, because there was a Peter Sullivan, the man that you, I think, maybe co-wrote it or Peter, whatever you did with him, the two-man bad.
We made a pseudonym up, and yes. Peter made a lovely contribution to Up There Kazaley.
Yes.
I acknowledge, and we're still great mates.
And he started a stage show called...
Yeah.
Was it called Up There Kazaley?
I think it was Up There Kazaley, the story. Or
yeah,
the
that's right. And it
like
gets
that.
Goes right back as to how you actually came up with the idea and did it.
Yeah.
And it was in relation to Channel 7's No, Channel 9, so I beg your pardon.
No, Channel 7.
No, Channel 9. No, Channel 9 did the Kerry Packer got him to do World Series cricket. It was called... what was it called? Come on, Aussie. Yeah. That's right. And that's
big number one.
And I think it is fair to say that the people at 7 said, Packer has taken the cricket world by storm by getting Come on, Aussie, come on. Mm.
Brilliant.
Could you come up with something that gets the AFL onto the map? Is that vaguely right?
Yeah, well, it was VFL then, of course.
VFL,
yep. A long time ago, 45 years ago this year. And that's really how it went. The advertising agency to blokes who, you know, spent most of the time in England. One was an Australian, but he sort of started his career in England. And the Pommy guy and called Ronnie. And Ronnie said, do you know anything about Australian football? And I played a bit in Port Melbourne. I was absolutely useless, by the way, because I didn't want to break my fingers because I played guitar.
Yep.
Hopeless footballer. But we sat there, we had a couple of beers, and I said, you know what you need? You need a cat's cry. And Port Melbourne, up there, Kazali, have a relationship because he, you know, played at South Melbourne.
South Melbourne, yeah.
And
Roy Kazali. Yeah.
And he said, I said, what about up there, Kazali? You know that old expression? He went, never heard of it.
Yeah.
But the other one said to me, Lionel, he said, oh, I don't know what it means, but it's got kind of catchy.
Mm. It's fantastic. Isn't that extraordinary how that up there, Kazali? And no one had probably, unless you're my age, no one has ever heard of Roy Kazali, but you've made him and his family and his generation synonymous with the greatness of our game.
Yeah, well, he was a wonderful man, and I didn't know a lot of his history, but he was very fair, and he was a teetotaler. And he trained a lot of young kids and gave them careers in Hobart.
Please, this will sound ridiculous. You didn't. How old? When was did Roy Kazali die?
It was a long time ago.
You didn't meet him.
No.
He was dead before you were. Yeah.
I thought of up there for Jezza.
Yep.
Didn't think for up there for Sammy because I don't think he was called Sammy in those days. Well, I can do it for a price, of course.
Oh, you could.
A couple of shekels here and there.
You could have said, Jezalenko, you beauty.
Yeah, what a great line.
Yeah, Mike Williamson. Well. Yeah, that Mike Williamson, Jezalenko, you beauty. Also, that is, I don't want to take the whole of this chat up on just Kazali because your body of work is extensive. And so you were part of the very successful trio, MPD.
Yes.
Pete and Danny. How did that start? And the great hit was Lonely...
Little Boy Sad. Yeah, they get the titles mixed up.
I know, I got the title mixed up. So how did you come to be with Danny Finley and Peter who was
Watson?
Watson, yeah.
Died many years ago. That's a long time ago too. But I lived on a migrant hostel within spitting distance of where we are now on the Yarra. It was Fisherman's Bend, migrant hostel. And I learnt guitar. We used to sing in the washhouses because they echoed. And the women, it was all women did all that drudgery in those days, didn't use them at night. They're scrubbing boards and sinks, but it echoed. So we'd sing a song, the boys, then the girls would sing a song. I mean, how innocent is that?
Yeah.
And I got a little bit better at it, and the bloke had a guitar, and I learnt a couple of chords. And I started playing this song, Little Boy Sad, which is a rockabilly song. Are you in line? Being untrue. But I couldn't play it fast, so I did dum, 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 da, da, da. Same riff, it slowed it right down, and it became a massive number one.
Massive, and I remember it. So you in 58?
I got to the hospital in 59.
You got here in 59. Yeah,
I was 11, and I think I was 15 when I became a session guitarist. Left school at 14. Went to school in Port Melbourne.
Now your mum and dad?
Dad was a former boxer and sergeant major. From Dublin.
And you live with them in a hostel here?
In a hostel,
fantastic.
And my mum worked on the hostel. And I worked, as you said, at Fisherman's Bend, at CAC as a sheet metal worker.
Yeah.
And cut my hands to shreds on the first day and went back 3 months later. But that was in this street too. So I have, it's unrecognisable.
When
now.
Was Little Boy Sad number one? Or
I think
hit?
It was 60, late 60s. I remember it.
Yeah, I remember it. My radio station is Golden Days Radio, and I hear it invariably comes on there. Little Boy Sad.
I get about 1 cent for every play. over that. It's wonderful.
Do you? Yes. You get a bit of a royalty? Well, so MPD, then you toured with them?
Yes, we toured extensively. We went to England to make our fortune. Trouble was there were some pretty good bands over there, a band called The Beatles,
yeah.
And the Kinks.
Yeah.
All these
great... Yardbirds.
All those fabulous 60s. Yep. And we were probably up to speed, but we came back here and I met a girl on the beach at Lawn and ended up marrying her a few years later.
Did you?
I didn't want to go back to
On Cold the beach Old. At Lawn?
Yeah, on the beach at Lawn.
Down there with the open neck trousers, just wandering around the streets there and luring them in.
Izzy Dye introduced
me. Oh, Izzy Dye.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
And you have a very good friend called Lindsay who listens to this. He'll be Lindsay McLaughlin. We're sending him a shout out is what we do here.
Great.
He says he listens to the podcast, so he'll be fascinated by this. Did you know all this about you, or this will be hearing this for the first time, Lindsay?
No, he's a little bit like Bill Shorten, you know. He hasn't heard it yet, but he'll agree with it when he does.
and I'm not getting on to up there, Kazali, yet. So then you went to Vietnam and government got you to do that?
No, it wasn't a government tour. There were two distinct differences. There were government tours where people went over and lived on the or stayed on the bases for a few weeks and all that stuff. And there were some of us that went there to make our fortune.
Yep.
And a bloke, an American promoter, who was a comedian, signed us up, and we had a three-piece band at the time, which wasn't MPD. It wasn't called MPD either. Sometimes on the web it says it was MPD, and it was called the Down Under Trio.
Yeah, generic name. Yeah, oh,
terrible. Anyway, we went over there, and we spent 9 or 10 months really living on the economy. We had a little villa in Saigon when we were there, but we spent most of our times in the Central Highlands with the US troops, not the Australian troops, entertaining the troops, and it was pretty rugged.
Rugged?
There were a lot of us there, a lot of Americans and dangerous. Koreans. And
dangerous? Were you in risk?
It was dangerous, but we were okay. But we took a few incoming rounds here and there.
Really?
We could hear them at night in Arnhem Cay hitting the runway at night, and they'd hit the sandbags on the side of our tent. So it was pretty. It was a pretty profound experience, cathartic, really.
Yeah, cathartic. And you, was that before you? That would be before you toured in the UK.
No, that was after.
That was after. There we are.
I played 50, with Johnny 50. Young's band for a while.
Did
in
you?
A company.
Yes.
And he went to England and hooked up with the Bee Gees. Wrote a couple of really big hits for him, and I didn't go to that. John and I didn't get on well in those days. We probably had similar egos, I reckon.
Yeah.
But we're good mates now. It was before then, and then I came back, and it was time really to settle down. So I got a job as a life insurance salesman.
Did you?
I wasn't very good at it, but
no.
I did it. I stuck with it. I was playing six nights a week in those days and collecting insurance premiums in Williamstown and at gigs I played at.
And you had a record label called Full Moon Records.
Yeah.
Was that before the fame of Up There Kazali? It says Up There Kazali or One Day in September. Are they the synonymous same title? Are they?
No,
or are they different
One Day
songs?
In September is a different song.
To Up There Kazali.
Yeah, it's totally.
One
there
day
was a little
in September,
line
that in there and fight.
No,
show them
one
your
day
Adam.
In September, we want to remember.
Yeah.
Isn't any doubting, we'll be in there shouting.
So you wrote both those songs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's extraordinary because they are just, when just football, anthems. They're just, yeah. That's well yeah. done. They're just anthems. And I'm still going to get on to how that started and the Roy Kazali story and what Seven did and what. You tried to gazump nine, and you did, of course. Oh, well, you didn't gazump them, but you matched them with the.
Well, they were my mates, the guys that wrote that. Too.
Yes,
come on, Aussie, Mo and Joe in in Sydney, and the very clever guys.
And the backstage, the backroom chat about the anthem and what Ron Casey wanted for Seven and their input, and you went backwards and forwards because that's what it has in the play anyhow. I don't know how accurate all that is. And then you were had Remix Publishing Company.
Music publishing, yeah. How'd still going today.
Is it?
Yeah, well, a music publisher really promotes people's songs. That's what they used to do. They're more like a banking system these days. They give people advances for their songs. But a good publisher gets out and works your songs. And I've done that with quite a few writers over the years. They're called covers, cover versions of someone else's songs. And or sometimes your own songs. People have covered mine. And it's a way of making money because the money these days, the last vestige of the music industry, the remnants, certainly in Australia, is publishing, collecting money for its use on television or its use on radio in commercials or however it's used. So it's probably the most lucrative side. But
they pay your residuals and a fee for using intellectual property.
There's an organisation called APRA, which is the Australian Performing Rights Association, and they collect money when things are played and they distribute it then to the writers. And without it, a lot of people would not be able to go on because the live music scene now is really lousy in Australia.
And I was just looking over here at Sue. Sometimes we play music inadvertently, and if we're going to put it to air, we get a letter or we get a notification. Yeah. They say you cannot play this. You have not got a license to play this, and we think, oh, I never even thought of that. Even just if it's a couple of bars of something,
that's true.
So they're right onto it, and good on them for doing that.
It's the only way writers get an income is through the playing of the music and live. You know, playing it not just on radio or television, but playing it, on stage at venues. The venues have a license, and the licenses aren't that expensive. And a broadcasting organisation have what they call a blanket license, which they negotiate, which covers everything they might play. And I think it's pretty fair, but it's very misunderstood by people.
Do the internet pay you as well? Does it go? Does publishers apply to that?
No, that's a little bit.
Yeah.
But not a lot. No, that's.
Spotify is notorious for not giving people much money.
Well, you know, I got a statement for over a million streams.
Yes.
And streams. Yeah. And I got a statement which was 38 pages long, and the amount was $32.
That's a million streams.
Yeah, it's just not. Spotify. A lot of people hail it. It was introduced to me by a former premier. He said, this is great because all the money goes, but it didn't. It was just a fraction. And now big publishers own a share of these big streaming organisations, and that's how they make a lot of their money.
So did you find your career took a turn for the better after after Up There Kazali and One Day in September came out, and people thought, now this is the man we want to have write stuff for us? I noticed you wrote You're Here to Win for the Commonwealth Games. Yeah. Was that after the success of...
Yes, that was long.
Yeah, so people thought, now we need an anthem, and the only man to go to is the great Mike Brady.
You got it, Sam. Yeah, I became the anthem writer of Australia.
And how do you sit down and do that?
Yeah, well, sometimes I got it right, sometimes I got it really wrong. I mean,
we wouldn't hear the ones you got wrong.
No, but some of them got played, you know. Yeah. They had contractual playing. But I wrote some of my better work. I did a thing for the Commonwealth Games for Channel 7, which was called Courage in Their Eyes, and I'm really proud of that.
Yeah.
But it typecast me, Up There Kazali and the anthems around that time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it reminds me of a joke about a goat. I was known as Mike Brady, the Up There Kazali writer.
No, and rightly so, because it is just part and parcel of the AFL package, VFL AFL package. Yeah. Now, Ron Casey, when he was head of Seven, he said we need something that sticks in the minds of people, because Kerry had done World Series cricket with Come On Aussie, which was, I know you think, was fantastic, and they said you've got to do something like this to put our vehicle on the market, which is AFL football. And so they got you in and they said, right, here's a blank canvas. Is that how it worked, or did they give you advice and you said, butt out of it, mate, I know what I'm doing, or leave it to me, or what?
Yeah. Well, it was an advertising agency, really, because they were very, very good, this they were called Campaign Palace in South Melbourne, and they, I did a lot of work for them, won lots of awards, but they never told me what to write. They told me what they wanted to achieve with the music, but they were smart enough to leave that up to me. Mm-hmm. And I did a lot of rubbish, which was people would write the things and I just set them to music. I mean, that's easy, but writing them from scratch is a little bit harder. So I put a lot into this. I spent 20 minutes writing it. And that was
20 minutes
for me. I put one of about 8 that morning. And it worked really well. I kind of knew that when I wrote it, that it had something. And I got up at 5 o'clock in the morning, which I used to do. I get up at the crack of lunch these days. But I kind of nailed it because I watched it. I was fascinated when I came here as a kid watching Aussie Rules because this was a much smaller city then, but so many games played on one day.
Yeah.
And the changes have been incredibly profound.
Yeah.
But I watched it as an outsider. And then I think round about the time I met Lenny, I went to a couple of games, but I didn't stay. I just went there and watched it. But I watched the crowd more than I watched the actual game. And Lenny wasn't into music and I wasn't into football. So that's why we were such great mates. I used to stay with him out in Reservoir with his parents on occasions. You know, we were really good mates. And so I knew a bit about the background of football and the passions, and it was huge. I came from England where football, their football is really big, but not as big per capita. I think Australia had the biggest attendance of live sport
per capita in the world.
In the world.
That's a fact.
Yeah, and it's wonderful.
Yep.
It's a huge part of Australian culture.
So it was called the two-man band because you and Sully, Peter Sullivan, what did he do?
Well, Peter was...
Well, it was called the two-man band.
Well, Peter did arrangements for me a lot of the time, and on the day that I did the longer version of it, because there was no name given to it, two-man band or Mike Brady or anything. But when we did a longer version of it, because Channel 7 knocked back a version that Peter arranged with the brass and orchestras. So we went back and we made a version like The Rough, which was just him and I.
Yep.
And he was the arranger and I needed a name for it on the day. So I said, look, I'll just call it the two-man band. So it was a pseudonym, really. I don't think we worked. If we did, it would have only been once as the two-man band. But it was just made up. And the same as Remix Publishing. I made that name up on the day, not knowing that remixes would become...
Such a big thing.
Yeah. And that caused confusion too.
So I know up there Casalia is sort of parochially Victorian or Melbourne, but you're nationally acclaimed for the... no matter where the games are played, or you get asked to do that interstate at various... everywhere.
To the annoyance of some NRL fans. But before Casalia, I wrote a song called War Horse. It might have been War House. But anyway, War Horse for Rex Mossop.
Yes.
For Rugby League.
Yep.
And it was about this bloke that, I forget his name now, had broken every bone in his body and had a picture with all the arrows to what he'd broken. So I had a little bit of experience, but it was number one in every state in Australia.
Warhorse?
Up there Casalia.
Yes.
Including Sydney, which I was way before the Swans.
Yeah.
I was very proud of
that. That's extraordinary.
There's only one person known in Sydney. Do you know who that was in Australian rules?
Let me just think.
One person was known.
Back in the day? Or
in the day and afterwards. There was one person, you asked about AFL.
I'm tempted to say Warwick Capper, but I don't know why I'm tempted to say that.
Well, before then.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Who? It was Ronnie Brassey.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Famous.
Yep. That's right. He was asked to go up and save the Swans' embarkation, if you like, onto the market up there.
What a man.
So we got into the studios at Campaign Palace, and you gave them a few roughs, if you like, and they said, "Yeah." When did they say, "Wow, we've got something here"?
It was by about March. Gordon Bennett was involved.
Yep.
Gary Fenton, the late great Gary Fenton, and Ron Casey, and I had a meeting with them, and they thought that I might be television material. So I did an audition, and I was useless. I could do it now, but I couldn't do it then. And I was absolutely useless. And they thought, oh, okay. So that finished my television career very quickly. But they knew that the song had something because they'd cut that great film clip.
Yep, great together. Film clip, yep.
And Gordon and Gary were very constructive in some of the suggestions, which I ignored. And but they were. And Ron Casey was really the boss, and we just go in with him now and again. But I liked him, and we were going to do a film called Up There, Casady. But what I didn't know was they'd already sold, or bought, I should say, the television rights to The Club.
Yes.
Which was a David Williamson play. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And they said, no, you're telling the wrong story. Well, I know why, because they'd already... Yes. So they got Up There, Casady, in The Club instead of in the film.
That was Graham Kennedy was in that, wasn't he?
It was, yeah. Graham Kennedy, yes, played a great role. He cried. He actually...
Did he?
But Jack Thompson told me that he cried in one of the scenes. So he was he was an actor.
Yeah.
And he played a part in his life, didn't he, like an actor?
Yeah, he did. Absolutely. Yeah. So... Up There, Casady preceded One Day in September, did it?
Yes.
Yes. So they're two great anthems. So everyone in the crowd, when they're whenever you sing it, they all sing it. They all know the words.
When did it come out?
One Day in September was 1981.
Yep.
I often say I was two at the time, but And it was very popular, but didn't sell like Up There, Casady. You know, quite often follow-ups don't sell, but it's sort of grown. Younger people like it. I love singing it. Mm. I've only sang it once, I think, at a grand final. And then I think I said One Day in October, and the people didn't like me changing it.
That's right, because they had the grand final in October 1 year, didn't they?
Yeah, that's right. Maybe One Day in October.
Yeah, that's right.
The footy is nearly over.
Well, it's so do you get asked by various other sports or organisations to come up with something to put them on the map, the basketballers or the netballers, or have you?
Yeah, I've done a few over the years. I've done a few sports, different sports.
So you research the history of them, and then you work out what's appropriate to put down and sing about. I don't know how you'd possibly go about thinking up the words and the tune to a song. That's the beauty of songwriters, isn't it?
I think you've just got to believe that you can do it and just bore on. You know, I mean, everybody's got creativity in them.
But you've got to have some musical... You just self-taught musician. Can you understand music? Can you read music?
I did that in my 30s. I did my grades of music.
Yeah.
Because I got caught out conducting the Melbourne Symphony, and they were all looking at me. It was one of those guest conductors. Yep. And I'm doing all this waving my arms around. And the violinists and the cello player in particular were crying with laughter because it's supposed to be dum, 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 and wrong. And they're not looking at the conductor.
No.
So I thought, no, I'm embarrassed. So I did piano practical and did my exams with the kids at the exhibition buildings. And I was 32 or 33 at the time. And so I did learn a bit, but I never really used it. I was always good with melodies, making up melodies. And you know, some would say I plagiarised here and there, but I don't think I did. I've plagiarised myself a few times, but I had a lot of front.
Knowing nothing about it, Mike, I'd say it'd be pretty hard to think up an original song or music that is not influenced by anything else you've ever heard. That must be so difficult to be very careful not to think, man, this could be confused with someone else who wrote that.
It's not only a great song for Australia, but if you think of sports songs around the world, like there aren't that many great sports songs all around the world. So that's one of the, you know, the greatest sports songs ever written, in my opinion.
Well, it's used in other countries. I think Derby County used the melody.
Really?
And for many years it said,
did they?
Author, originator, unknown. So we caught up with them and had a chat.
Wow.
And because the publishers at the time wanted millions. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, no, I'm not the litigious person. I mean, if they just acknowledge me, I'd be happy.
Really? So other clubs and put words to the da 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 da. Really?
Yeah. And the verses. Yeah. They in
and
the,
they didn't.
The Derby County,
that is absolutely plagiarising.
Yeah, it is. It goes. Steve Bloomer's watching. Steve Bloomer was a deceased star. of Derby County. And it goes, Steve Bloomer's watching. He's watching down on us. Anyway, we did have a chat, and I think we settled for 10 quid or something.
No, what, like why? That. Did, what, that's taking your...
They were struggling at the time. Now they're...
Oh, well, bad luck.
Had a lot of success.
Success.
But I still see a trickle of royalties. But you'd be surprised how little Up There Kazady earns from royalties. Up There Kazady has earned money for TV commercials and... information and stuff like that, but not because we're a small country population-wise. It's in the hundreds, not the thousands per year.
Don't tell me the AFL don't give you a reasonable stipend to go out and sing it at the grand final and or at functions or at the Brownlow or wherever. Don't tell me they're mean with booking you, are they? Surely.
No. And now they do actually pay a performing royalty, which is through the writer, and that's separate. I get a fee on the day, which would
as
be...
As a performer.
As a performer, fee, yeah. But only, I'm not really, I'm part of what they call on-ground entertainment, so I don't get anything like what the headliners get.
Yeah.
And that's probably right, they get international people in. But if I got a quarter of maybe what the least is they paid for an act over the last 10 or 12 years... It would be my biggest payday ever if I got a quarter of the largest of what they the lowest of what they paid, not the largest, the lowest they've reportedly paid. But you know, it is a good payday, and I love the crowd.
Participation.
Home, when I came out in 1979, Sam, on that little rostrum, I get a milk crate now, but you know, I had a little rostrum there. I came out and. People are saying, "Get on, yeah, Mike," and men and women, because Up There Kazady is not all about blokes. You know, it was. I made very careful that took very careful
universal
care that it was universal. Yeah.
Right? Even in those days, you were
I thought that. Thinking. Well, I realised it was 50% of the market. We started about big men flying, and every song had big men flying, and the boys come out and all that stuff. I thought we were isolating, and it might have been part of the help. That Kazady got with the other with the half the population.
And are you are you acquaintances or friends of other performers that come out or around Australia? Who are your who do you admire or who do you know in the industry that impress you and vice versa? You would impress them.
Look, I've met a lot over the years, and I know a few. When Kiss came out last year, Gene Simmons ran out and gave me a fist punch, which went viral all over the world.
Did it?
This old bloke, I think he's about a year younger than me.
Yeah.
But anyway, you can't see it. But anyway, he gave me a fist punch, and Paul Stanley I met and spoken to him a few times. You know, they're pretty big stars. They're both billionaires. I mean, they knew what they were doing. And I admire people that make the most of their talent. You know, I don't... A lot of people that call themselves divas, female artists and that, are actually really clever, but they're not divas as such. They sing, but with a lot of help, but they're great knowing where they're going. I mean, you could say that...
Kylie would be one of those. She's
Kylie,
fantastic.
I don't think she's a great singer
at
all.
No, but she is just...
But she's a great artist.
Fantastic.
Madonna is a great artist. Yep. Taylor Swift has caused a phenomena by knowing what she's doing and being true to what she's doing. There are great writers and there are great singers and they're a mixture of both. But on Grand Final Day, they've got it right many times, got it wrong a few times. But, you know, the AFL are cursed if they do and cursed if they don't. They get a lot of criticism... But it's very difficult. It's five times the size of a rugby ground, or it's a massive ground, and it's in daylight. But I think I found myself. It's really funny because we haven't been that close over the years. The AFL, they don't need to be close to me. But I've always praised them on radio, particularly for doing the best that they could possibly do. I don't think they can do much more than what they've done.
Well, that's interesting. Why aren't the AFL... I would thought the AFL would be extremely grateful for kicking the whole show off on Grand Final week and Grand Final day. Surely, or are they a bit aloof and a bit take you for granted?
They have new management now. But I'm fairly way down on their list of priorities, I think. And that's okay. It's okay. They give me an adjustment every now and again. But it's called, as I said, on-ground entertainment, not headliner. And that's how they see it, you know. It's a rung down. But I'm really grateful for the exposure. Keeps me, you know, in live jobs. And you've seen me 3,000 yep. times sitting there going... David Parkin's another one. I reckon David Parkin's seen me more than anybody else. Yep. And he sits there attentively.
Ah, it's good.
I caught him yawning once. But
So the Olympics, I don't think they're with us for a while. Up in Brisbane, aren't they coming?
Yeah, coming.
They haven't asked you just to put your thinking cap on about trying to attract people to come to Australia for the Olympics, or that's a bit of a generic sport, isn't it?
No, I always come up with an idea, and sometimes I try to sell it, and sometimes I don't. Sometimes it gets pinched during the selling process. I'm not saying that the Olympics, but, you know, you've got to expose your music to people, and sometimes that influences what they do. I won't say plagiarises, but influences what they do, particularly lines. Your lines in... songs sometimes come out as I haven't released the song. I played it to the serious management of sports, and the line comes up in the next ad they do, but it might be a spoken line.
Yep. And, I see. Yeah, kind of, I get you.
That's the risk
you
take. You know, come up with a good line, and it ends up somewhere else. Songwriters go through that all
the time.
Don't
get them to sign a what do you call it? Non-disclosure thing. Yeah. You couldn't be bothered.
You're trying to sell to them.
Yeah.
I just put up with it. Yeah. You know, some people say I'm stupid.
Degree of trust in it, I suppose.
Yeah, it still goes
people
on.
People want to dudge you, they will.
Yeah, that's right, and they can. And but I don't. You know, I'm flattered by plagiarism. If I'm plagiarized.
Now, I said at the start. You still, I should know this, you do the radio?
No, I don't.
I thought you probably didn't, but you did a stint on overnight radio during the holidays?
Saturday nights.
Yes,
and other
Saturday
shifts
nights.
I did other
I
shifts,
saw, I used to listen to you on Saturday nights. Yeah, that's right, I used to listen to you. You used to get guests in and you used to play...
Yes.
And what you did that for 18 years?
18 years, every weekend.
Don't tell me they gave you the flick or you surely decided you wouldn't do it.
No, they wanted change.
Move in another direction. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, another direction. And that was fine. It was time anyway, I think. There was no malice at all. It wasn't that successful.
18 years.
18 years. I mean, that's amazing. I just kept turning up.
And you take talk back?
Yeah, lots of talk. A 6-hour shift it was mostly.
I know.
Long shift.
And from what hour was?
From 6 p.m. It was called Mike Till Midnight.
Yeah, it was too.
6 p.m. till midnight on the 3AW. I mentioned their name.
That's a hell of a stint, isn't it?
It was a long stint.
That would give them some.
So when I did other people's shows, like in the afternoons, and that's 3 hours, it was like a breeze. Time to go home. Lovely.
And where is home? You live in the city or you're down the coast somewhere?
I live on the west coast of Victoria. Yeah. Love it down there. It's like being on a boat without the expense.
Yes.
When I look out the window, I'm at sea, especially in storms.
And I don't want to ask you too much about your personal life. Are you ensconced down there with a man, woman or beast? Or are you just living? You have a cat?
Yeah. He died about 3 months ago. Yeah. Broke my heart, I have to say. Yeah. What a sook. But it's really sad. I got really close to this... he used to talk to me. He was an Oriental. But now I've been by myself, lived by myself for many years.
Yeah.
I have friends who I stay with on occasions in Melbourne who are deep and friends, and I'm close to them.
You got some kids?
Got
some offspring, heirs to the mortgage?
Yeah, the oldest is 51, the youngest is 28.
Yeah.
He's doing very well. But they're all doing well in what they do. I've got a daughter who lives down there too, and my brothers live down that way. It's all, and another son who's in the entertainment business on the production side. Mm-hmm. So they range from 28 to 51. I mean, I often say the 51 mentally is older than I am. He's far more sensible than I am, but you'd understand that.
I would understand that. It's just an amazing journey, just from not one song, but you're known for it, and being infamous. You're known for being famous. No, it's good.
I think there's one thing we might have missed, or might have this wrong. Is there a jingle for an insurance company? That goes something along the lines of, lucky, you're with Amy.
Oh, that's you, isn't it?
That lucky is amazing.
You're with Amy.
That was you?
Yeah.
Good on you, Ivan. Well, what about some? Give us some. Any other ones we'd know?
Did you do a lot of advertisements?
Yeah. Give us some. Yeah. We're quite interested.
Things like Hard Yakka.
Hard Yakka?
Hard Yakka.
Hard Yakka.
That's anthemic as well.
It's still around. Things like stupid voices like, you know, Dodo, Dodo, Internet of Flies. I love mad voices.
Yeah.
Dodo.
And Dodo, that was Larry Kesselman.
And Larry Kesselman, that's exactly right.
Yeah, yeah. It runs the basketball industry.
Done other things for him as well. Well, he owns it, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, so it was a...
So you did Dodo?
I was always good at ditties. You know? I've always good at ditties, like silly ditties.
Is that you?
Yeah,
that's fantastic. Well done, Ivan. I'm glad you're...
These are like other hits.
SBC, big beans or spaghetti for hungry little human. Go on, what else?
Oh, well, there's thousands of them.
Well, give us a couple.
Oh, you can't beat a sale. You can't beat a sale. Yeah. You can't, and things like... Morning already and you're out of bed. Time for a juice, no milk, it instead. And I put a line in that one, which I'm very proud I got away with it, when it went, it's a little bit rough when you don't get enough.
And what was that for?
For milk.
For just milk? Yeah, milk. Oh, fantastic.
Milk it instead. And at Navy, I'm proud of that one because I wrote a line called, you'll be wet, you'll be homesick and frightened, but the pride of the fleet will be you.
Remember.
And... That they bought that, the Navy, and it was enormously successful, which I often say says something about the Australian psyche, because you go to the recruiting office and say, oh, where do I sign up to be wet, homesick and frightened? Over there, sir or madam.
So do you get asked by those companies like Sayo or Hard Yakka, or do you think I could write a one line or a one verse song for these parody for these people, and you present it to them and they say, gee, that's good. Which comes first, the cart come before the horse or what? How did you get to write those things?
That's a really good question, because sometimes if they leave me to my devices, I come up with a line that becomes their positioning, which is lucky or with Amy.
Yeah.
And how that came about was, I'd been away sailing, and you know boats, and
yep.
I had in those days I had a boat with a skipper and.
I remember that boat. Yeah. What was that called? This big sailing boat.
It was a Birrali 2. It was called a big sort of a fawn covered thing.
It was
60 feet something, and
it was too.
We're out in Bass Strait.
What was it called?
Birrali 2.
No, what is it called? Birrali.
Birrali. Yeah.
Spelled.
B.
No, I remember seeing that boat.
A-H-L-E-A.
Was it Birrali?
Really. I had a few over there. I had Ocean Dreamer, which was another sailing boat, and all poetic sort of names.
Yeah.
Burley in indigenous dialect has two different meanings. One can be a lean-to, and the other can be a beautiful young woman. And I think it was named after the beautiful young woman. I'd like to say that anyway. And we were out in Bass Strait, and the spreader broke off the mast, right out the mast, and the skipper was an old man, wonderful man called Don Mickleborough, great sailor, and he got up and he said, anyone dead? And I said, no. He said, anyone hurt? And I said, no. He said, oh, clear it up, I'm going back to bed. And he said, cut off, bad luck, and I never heard that expression, it's around now. So two weeks later, I got asked to do this by their advertising agency, have you got a line or something you can come up with? And I said, oh, well... Why don't you say, oh, I read one of their claims, and like it said, like, when driving in an easterly direction, a tree appeared from a westerly direction and remained stationary.
Yeah.
I said, do you pay claims like that? And in those days, they said, they probably said, I don't know. They said, oh, yeah, we do. And I said, gee, they're lucky they're insured we do then, aren't they? And I said, what about saying, Amy, because you can't help bad luck?
Yeah.
My mate, Noel Delbridge, who I wrote a few things with, said, too long, too many words. And I said, well, what about just lucky you're with Amy?
That is extraordinary. That's such a well-known...
Is it lucrative? Like, as they... Did you get just a set fee for that, or do they pay you royalty? No, they wouldn't.
That's another interesting question. These days I roll them over for 1 or 2 years.
Yep.
So they get a licence for 1 or 2 years. In those days, we didn't do it. And many years later, I realised that I owned the copyright in some of the biggest corporations in Australia... of their positioning line, which they still used.
Yep.
So I went back and they understood that. They told me to lost at first, but then realised that I was right. Mm. So we came to an arrangement where they got another licence, which was for perpetuity. Mm. But I retained certain elements of it so that I could get that APRA, Australian Performance, yep. So I could get payment and royalty every time it got played. So it adds up. It's cents here and there, you know, but it adds up over a year. Mm. 10 years.
But it's quite interesting. You started off selling insurance and then all those years later...
You're in the theme for it.
They're selling big back to you.
Did God you ever work with John Singleton?
Worked with his agency. Yep. I wrote I Like It Like That, which is a big campaign for Kentucky Fried.
Yeah.
And that was another one.
You wrote that?
With Mojo.
Yep.
And with Alan Morris came down and I said, look, what about, you know, we had a pile of it on the table, and I said, look, gee, it is tasty. It's oil, cooked in oil or whatever, but it is quite good. I kind of like it like that. And it answers the objection. And I learned that as a salesman. You'd answer their objection. Would you like some life insurance? No, thank you. No, I say, I know why you don't want life insurance, and I'll tell you, but you're wrong. So it's like that. You answered the objection, and that's where I'd like it. So they still use that. That became a strategy.
Yeah.
Wasn't just a line. So even now, they've got a line, I forget what it is, but it's in the background at the end of most of their commercials.
For KFC?
For KFC. It goes, I don't care, I love it.
Yeah,
that's it. That's an extension of that. I didn't write that line, but it's kind of like...
Well, I watch Fox. Lucky you're with Amy, comes up, it drives me mad, but I'll look at it with different... I'll look at it with a different renewed note of respect now.
The idea is you can annoy the... Be what he says
bejesus
out of them.
Yeah.
As long as you they place remember the thought in there. And when they're in the market, which in insurance is probably every 5-10 years, they think of you front of mind. Mm. It's like... The Blind Factory, which I didn't do. But people, everybody remembers it. And
I wouldn't buy a blind from that.
I bet you would. I bet you think of them, though, when you're buying a blind. I bet you come.
I'd go up to Google some other factory. So I've been trying to think of the things that have been on my... What about It's Not Your Money, Ralph? You didn't write that.
No, did I didn't write that, but that's a great line.
Yeah.
But then it became a bit thin because the banks became a bit...
Yeah.
Well, I said a bit greedier, more profit-oriented.
You didn't write the Goggomobile?
G-O-G-G-I.
You wouldn't have to write that, would you?
No, but Tommy... Yeah.
Tommy Dysart.
Yeah, Tommy Dysart I worked with a lot. And
he was great, wasn't he?
He was a great actor, too.
SBC Bank. Lots of footy songs, lots of... You know, I've written them for basketball. I've written them for all sorts of sports. Hockey, ice hockey. Hockey, and that was called Drive It Up, You Aussies, or something. I forget what it was. But they get used, and then they get discarded. And, you know, and sometimes they come back.
Did you ever work with the Coulda Beans?
Lot of work with the Coulda Beans.
They're making a resurgence, aren't they? Didn't they... In this politically correct day and age, some of the material was not offensive, but people said, oh, you can't say that.
Look, they're very talented, all of them so talented.
Yeah, they are.
Greg Champion, Ian Carver. I mean, they were a benchmark.
Tony Leonard.
Yeah, Tony Leonard, who was a big part of their... Yeah. And he stayed behind when they left one of the stations and went to another.
Yeah, he did too.
Brilliant. You know, I worked with Cover a few weeks ago and he went into politics, as you may remember.
Yeah.
And Greg, we've written songs together. I co-wrote and produced with him and That's What I Like About Football. My only contribution to that was, you know, that's what I like about football. And I went, because it needed a hook. That was quite a big hit.
Well, now, Mike Brady, this is just an extraordinary from a man who was in a hostel out at Fisherman's Bend, doing sheet metal work for the Australian Aircraft Corporation. This is extraordinary. You are synonymous with our great game, whether you like the game or not. It's a great game. And And you are number one person asked to any of those events because of that reason, and you get the crowd involved, and that's the main thing, isn't it? To get someone who wants to be there for you, not in spite of you.
Get to their hearts.
Yeah.
Get to their hearts.
Well, thank you very much, Mike, for coming in and speaking to us on You Cannot Be Serious.
It's been really lovely. I've watched, and congratulations to you, mate, because you've done a great job. And you've reinvented yourself so many times, and I love it, especially being a mate. We don't talk that much, but we do spend some time.
No, well, someone who's got no talent, I've done all right, but you've someone who's got some talent, you've been remarkable and used it beautifully. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you too.
Thanks, guys.
Lovely to see
Thanks,
you.
Mate.
And Sue.
Night. I'm worried because